All right, thanks everybody for joining us in the last session of APHA. I can't even tell you how I'm excited to see this many faces in the room. I really thought it would be like me and the speakers and the moderator. So I am going to couch this in the fact that I am not going to be able to uncover the entire world of like the data that exists out there, other than to say that there's a lot of data that exists that you can use. Then there's data that's coming all of the time, and data that is trying to be organized by various places. So this is really just a quick snapshot of what I consider my kind of go-to resources when I'm thinking about some research questions. So I'm Erin Hennessy. I have no relationships to disclose at this time. So I thought I'd start off with some of like the not so nice things about doing secondary data analysis, so then we can build up to the excitement and joy of doing secondary data analysis. So we all know what some of the weaknesses are in terms of the fact that, you know, the study design is set and the data has already been collected, and it is what it is. You get what you get and you don't get upset, according to the law of the three-year-old that I have. And it's oftentimes non-experimental, it's oftentimes cross-sectional, even when it is repeated over time, like NHANES, you know, that's still not the same joys of having true longitudinal data of the same population. The constructs that you're looking at may lack depth or might not be as comprehensive in that you only have a fewer than what you would really love to have in terms of a psychometric perspective. It requires special statistical techniques, and I'll come back to that. It's a common thread in my talk. And there are costs that are often associated. There's a lot of public use free data. So if you're, you know, if you don't have a lot of funds, then there's still a lot that you can do with your own time. But if you, depending on your research question, want to dig a little bit deeper, then oftentimes that granularity sits in the house of restricted data, which can cost money or logistics. So you can actually go to the NHANES, to the RDC, the Research Data Center, and do data analysis on site to get access to, you know, geographical information. But depending on the nature of that research question, you don't leave with that data. All of your data analysis stays there. And you can ask for statistical support while you're at the RDC, but that costs even more money. But again, depending on your research question, that might be what you want to do. And, you know, there are certain fields or departments or people out there who have the bias that secondary data analysis isn't super exciting or cool or novel, but I would disagree with that. There's a host of kind of issues and considerations. I wouldn't call them weaknesses, just things to keep in mind if you're entering into the foray of secondary data analysis, especially if you're trying to make extrapolations to the U.S. population or say something about national representation, that it does require advanced or more advanced knowledge than what is often in a graduate level statistical course. To be able to treat that data, and that there's nuances in understanding no matter what data set that you kind of get familiar with, you really need to spend time getting to know your new buddy and figuring out what are the different iterations of a particular item across time, because they might change. And it's aggravating, but there are reasons for that. So for instance, NHANES 2003 to 2006 data has really nice accelerometer data of a hip-worn accelerometer. The latest iteration of NHANES that isn't publicly available yet, but that will be coming out, did not use a hip-worn accelerometer. It used a wrist-worn accelerometer, and there's a host of methodology considerations in which those two things will not be comparable, and that is something that is a disadvantage, so that we can't look at what was going on in 03 to 06 and figure out what was going on 10 years later, but there were a lot of advantages to switching to the wrist-worn accelerometer, including having a better capture of sleep. So again, you know, these are the things that you all have to kind of keep in mind as you're entering into the world of secondary data. And then, as I mentioned, there's variation in measure scales across and within data systems. So there's a big effort to do more integrated data analysis, so merging data sets and merging constructs, a lot of that effort led by NIH, but there are issues and things that you have to keep in mind when you're doing that. A lot of the public data that exists now is really ripe to merge, and you have to think about the different ways in which you would want to do that. For instance, does a particular data set have a state-level variable? Can you converge by state? There might be other geographical layers that you might be able to merge or link data on. So I think, you know, the key note is to think a little bit more flexibly about what you might be able to do if you know that it's a possibility to do that. Also, a lot of websites that house their particular data resource or others are continually sending notes about errors that might be in the data or updates to the data. So you really have to keep a tune, if you're using a particular data resource, what the latest and greatest information is. Certain variables might be compressed to protect confidentiality of a particular respondent. So for instance, the National Survey of Children's Health, which has BMI data, it actually only gives you BMI to a certain age, because under that, it was not considered to be reliable. And then even within that, it compressed extreme values because they were concerned that people would be able to be identifiable if they didn't compress those outliers. So that's something that you need to consider when you're using that particular variable. And if you're here because you do diet and physical activity research, then the world of measurement and measurement error is your friend or foe, depending on your discipline. But it's, depending on your research question, one of those things that you need to kind of keep in mind. If your research question is better answered by a direct assessment of energy expenditure, or you can get away with something that's quote-unquote objective, like accelerometry data, or you might go all the way to self-report. And depending on the nature of your research question, that measurement error may or may not have a big influence, and something that you have to keep in mind. There are statistical approaches to deal with some of those measurement errors, but again, coming back to your research question of what you're really trying to achieve is going to dictate that. And of course, there's not a ton of public use data resources that did direct assessment of a diet or a physical activity, and so we're left with, at best, accelerometer. So as I mentioned before, you know, at NCI, the statistician that I work with mostly loves to keep reiterating in my head of it's complex for a reason. And although you can use some, you know, data sets to do more of a convenient sample, it really is purposeful to treat the data in the way it was designed to be treated. So using NHANES and dealing with the fact that it's complex survey data, you need to account for that complex sampling. If you're a student, that means getting more familiar with other statistical software packages and other statistical techniques that may or may not, you know, cost money. So you may have to visit the world of SAS or Sudan or SEDA to do those kinds of things that are required for clustering, stratification, et cetera. But all of that sad news said, there's a lot of strengths to the world of secondary data analysis. So even though it's already been designed and collected, it can save you time and money. There's no need to always reinvent the wheel. You can, again, if you're thinking flexibly, think international or cross-historical or multi-level in the nature of the research questions that you're thinking about. The data sets often contain considerable breadth, even though you're losing at times that depth. So most of the time, people might be using secondary data analysis for, you know, grant work or for the development of a dissertation. But it also allows for hypothesis generation and testing. There are typically larger sample sizes, and when we at the National Cancer Institute think about it, you know, when you're thinking about cancer as the outcome, you need oftentimes those larger samples to be able to look at the questions that you have in mind. And of course, you could test for trends over time in a way that you can't by just doing a one-time study in your own institution. So hopefully I've shed some light on why you would want to do public use secondary data analysis. And really, it's a little hard to get back to where are the resources? Where do I start? And a lot of times, you know, you ask your colleagues, you ask your friends, you read papers, and you look at their data sources. And those are all still true because the world is evolving very rapidly when it comes to data. But there are, again, as I said at the beginning, an effort to kind of merge these worlds together so people aren't just going out each time and reinventing that wheel. So there are tons of data that vary at geographical scale, whether it's national, state, or local. And I'm going to just give a plug to the study that we're doing at the National Cancer Institute called the FLASHE study, the Family Life Activity Sun Health and Eating Study, because that just finished data collection in October. It will be a public use resource in about a year, and that has both objective and self-report physical activity. It has a dietary screener. It takes a multi-level look at cancer preventive health behaviors. So that kind of work is being done a lot and is being put out there for the research community to use, and that's why you need to kind of keep on top of what's coming. There's the Inter-University Consortium for Political and Social Research that's housed at UMichigan, and that has several large-scale data sets that you might be familiar with, the Panel Survey of Income Dynamics, AdHealth. Data.gov is another place to think more broadly about the health spectrum of data. In addition, the National Library of Medicine. There's SodaPop, that's one of my favorite, but as a nutritionist, I have a hard time with SodaPop, but it's a fun little acronym that's housed at Penn State that is an archive for population studies. And then I think I put somewhere in the back, and they might be circulating, materials about the National Collaborative for Childhood Obesity Research, which we affectionately call as NCORE. Their catalog of surveillance systems, which I'll go in depth about. Even if you're not interested in childhood obesity, it's a collection of data sources that have diet variables, weight variables, BMI variables. So you can think about it even if you're, you know, somebody who's thinking about other disease or health outcome endpoints. So NCORE is, if you're not familiar with it, a collaborative of the four largest funders for childhood obesity research. It's made up of several institutes at the National Institutes of Health, the CDC, the USDA, and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And, you know, the point is to create resources and help the research community do research in childhood obesity. And they created the first ever online directory, so called the Catalog of Surveillance Systems, and the goal was to make sort of this one-stop access to data sets that house environmental and policy factors, as well as health behaviors, outcomes, and determinants of obesity. Right now, there's over 100 publicly available systems, some that are free, some that cost money. And again, there's information at the national, state, and local level, and you can, and it's really ripe for exploring data linkages across multiple levels. So this is what, you know, you would come if you went to the website to see. There's other tools and resources out there. So there's the Measures Registry. If you're interested in measurement stuff, you can find a lot of measures to get at physical activity or diet or obesity. But you would just click on Search the Catalog. And here is like kind of the first visual of what you would see. So right now there's 105 systems. And you can click on the left side, you can see that you can look for, you know, what are the data sources that have data at the individual level. And you can click multiple things. So I want individual level, I want physical activity related, and I want school-aged children. And it'll stop, you know, keep getting smaller, but it will direct you to those resources that actually have that information. Or maybe you're more open and you just, you know, you want to think about longitudinal data. So there are 19 resources in there that have longitudinal data. And then I checked off physical activity related, and you can't see the whole snapshot, but there are 49 out of 105. And say you wanted, you were interested in three, the American Time Use Survey, the Health Behaviors in School-Aged Children Survey, and the National Survey of Children's Health. And you can compare those surveys and see what attributes they have across all of the different domains. And then you can, if you go deeper dive into a particular survey, so for instance, the American Time Use Survey, then you can look at it at a glance and read information about what the American Time Use Survey is. And American Time Use Survey is one of the more interesting surveys, I think, pushing us a little bit forward, because it does a time diary stamp on physical activity. So it's actually like not as broad in terms of over, you know, the course of like several months, but you know, you can really get more fine-grained time scale on physical activity behavior. If you want to learn about their sampling, you click on the sampling tab. The key variables, so this is where it will tell you what the variables are that are measuring physical activity or diet. How you can actually get to the data, so a lot of them have hyperlinks to get into the actual survey and let you know if it's free of charge or if there's an actual charge. And again, it'll note if some of the data layers actually have a charge. It gives you an indication of whether it's possible to do a geographical linkage. I think it's also helpful to see, you know, this will tell you at the bottom when this page was last updated, but publications that have come out. So, you know, a lot of times people get nervous because it is a little bit of a rat race when using public source data of who's going to beat me to publication. But again, depending on your research question, there's almost always a way to frame it so that's not, you don't usually get trumped. But it is nice to know how the data has already been used, so maybe you would avoid a research question. And then there's various resources that are attached to ATUS. So again, you know, that is a comprehensive resource that's being continually updated, but even that doesn't have certain things in it, you know, that are really relevant to the physical activity community, such as the International Children's Accelerometry Database. And if you were in the session this morning, Justin Moore presented on his work using this database and looking at some metabolic outcomes. But this is a consortium of 20 partners that have pooled their accelerometer data for 3 to 18-year-olds across various countries. There are still, you know, of course, limitations with everything, and the data comes from the early 90s to the late 2000s. But you can cherry-pick which surveys you want. You can put them all together, and it allows you to do many novel things. In that same session, I actually learned about the sister study, which is out of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, so even though it's part of NIH. And again, their outcome isn't obesity, but it's a breast cancer study, but it has physical activity-related variables. So if you're interested in, you know, other disease endpoints, these things, again, you know, it's not like the federal government has a lot of dollars to tout what resources are there, so you have to dig a little. But if you go to the website, it has information on how you can complete a data users agreement and get access to the data. So obviously what's missing is cross-linking data sources. There's a limited amount of research linking multiple surveys, so that is absolutely needed in the field. But I think putting these resources and compendiums together tells us what our data gaps are. So we have a lot of cross-sectional and sometimes repeated intervals with significant time lag between measurement. But, you know, what everybody is trying to work toward in the field, and I'm speaking as myself, Erin Hennessy, and not as NIH, but there is a significant amount of effort to think about how are we going to deliver the repeated, longitudinal, intensive, fine-time granularity, multi-level data that we need to answer the questions we have. So is that best done by funding a particular institution to do that or designing a new study that's going to be 80 years long? I think we know sometimes that often fails miserably. So what are the powers that we can do to crowdsource data and crowdsource items that might be out there? There are conversations happening with the commercial sector. So a lot of the data that we want and need in the house phase is housed by Google or other places, and it costs a lot of money. And how can we create partnerships to allow that to be more accessible to you? Obviously, you probably are familiar with the push that's going around electronic health records and trying to get more health behavior, rapid assessments with the limitations that they have to evaluate physical activity and diet, and then accessing those electronic health records. There's a lot in terms of integrating technology and sensors, so mHealth, ecological momentary assessment, and I think, you know, the time is ripe that a lot more will happen in the next 10 years that will facilitate the data that we need. There's a lot of resources for analyzing secondary data. So there's trainings that are 2 to 5 days long, 1 week offerings at various annual meetings, including EPHA. There are different tutorials. There's online tutorials for using in Haynes. And there's platforms to learn about the different statistical packages that you need to use. So I've sort of said this in that secondary analysis leaves untapped opportunities, but you need to make a lot of considerations for how it was collected, et cetera. So thanks. I'll take questions. Thanks for my standing ovation, Dr. O. It has infants, but it doesn't, and some of the infant surveys may have information on the pregnancy, but it's not a selection parameter that you can select on. That's a good question. But we are working harder more for like 0 to 2 and the pregnancy period. Thank you.